Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Andrea and Ron DeFeo, Dr. Robert Peskin, and Dr. Raymond Ellis. The Infrastructure Report Card, produced every 4 years by the American Society of Civil Engineers, has become the most highly visible tool for assessing the condition of U.S. infrastructure and its impacts. The Report Card is now part of the national dialogue on infrastructure needs, talked about in the press and in the Congress and in the statehouses. The overall grade in the just-released 2017 version is D+. We'll talk today with Casey Dinges, who's senior managing director of the ASCE, about what this grade means in terms of different kinds of infrastructure, and we'll examine the changes that have occurred since the previous report card in 2013. We first spoke with Casey about the report card in 2009, when the overall grade was D. So in the past 8 years, we've only advanced one half of a grade level. So welcome back, Casey. I'm anxious to talk with you.
Thanks. Good to be back with you.
So what's the difference in the 2017 assessment from what you reported in 2013?
Well, you know, we can actually go back to 1998, and the overall national GPA has been in the D range since we started doing these report cards in 1998. The most recent one before 2017 was actually 2013, just 4 years ago. That was also a D+, so you're identifying the overall D that we had in 2009. So there's been a slight uptick. Just looking at the 16 categories over the past 4 years, we still have 12 of these categories in the D range. We have only 3 in the C range and only 1, the rail system, in the B range. So, you know, that's how we get the overall GPA of a D+. And there's been some increased investment in some of these categories in the rail sector, which is mostly held by the private sector, the freight rail system. They use the economic downturn as an opportunity to make big investments in their infrastructure, and they have been doing that. A number of red and blue states, I should point out, in the past 3 years have actually adjusted their gas taxes upwards. I should point out that over 95% of the legislators that have supported those increases have gotten reelected. So that's a little message for Washington there, that maybe casting a gas tax vote is not the end of your political career, but just the beginning.
That is an interesting observation, because I think there is an ideological resistance to raising the gas tax, even in circumstance, for example, as we have at the federal level, when the gas tax hasn't gone up since 1993.
Correct. And it was never indexed to inflation, so it's lost roughly 40% of its purchasing power. So bills are being introduced now to raise that tax. And we have a new president who's talking a lot about infrastructure. He's thrown the $1 trillion figure out on the table. You know, we hadn't had a presidential campaign where we had the two finalists for the presidency both talking about infrastructure, but historically and traditionally, infrastructure has been a bipartisan or a nonpartisan issue in the United States. Oftentimes, there is Republican leadership when there are big moves. Abraham Lincoln and the Transcontinental Railroad, Dwight Eisenhower and the interstate system, and now we have another Republican president who's talking big. He even used the term dream big in his speech to Congress. So, you know, the devil will be in the details. The president referenced public and private sources of capital. There are certainly those advocating for more use of public-private partnerships, which in the transportation space often means more tolling of facilities. But I'm sure there'll be a very lively debate about how to pay for this.
Yes, and always it comes down to how to pay for it. So you have 16 categories in which you've rated infrastructure. Are there categories where we're doing better and categories where we're doing worse?
There were 3 of them came up. 7 saw improvement: hazardous waste, inland waterways, levees, ports, rail, schools, and wastewater. But the improvement was so incremental that it wasn't enough to change the overall grade of D+ at the national level. 3 categories experienced a drop in the grade: parks, solid waste, and transit. And the remaining 6 categories held steady: aviation, bridges, dams, drinking water, energy, and roads.
Do you break this down by geography? Can you say anything about the conditions in the various states?
I can't speak to that specifically right now, but I do encourage people to go to our website, infrastructurereportcard.org. download the app for free at the App Store, Save America's Infrastructure app. And in there is a rich volume of state-by-state data. So you can go to any state and then bring up information for different categories of infrastructure. And a number of the ASC sections over the past 10 years have done their own report cards at the state and regional level. And so we have those efforts have played out in about 40 states now. And another thing people can do is just search by given category dams, and then just look at that category across different states to compare how states are doing on the issue of dam safety or dam inspection. So there are a couple of ways to cut it data across the states.
We'll put that URL on our website so people can get access to it. Remind us of the methodology. How does it work? Is it done by volunteers or consultants?
We use a team of about 25 ASC members cutting across in expertise the various categories we look at. So we have, you know, people with expertise in dams and bridges and rail and the energy grid, the inland waterway systems, so that we have technical expertise across the board. So these are our members, but it's a volunteer effort with the assistance of staff that's constantly gathering new information, new studies as we go along between the report cards. Federal Highway will update their condition and assessment report of U.S. roads and bridges. So as new information is made available, staff is keeping track of that and then alerting the members. In terms of the criteria that are used, there's eight that we look at. One is capacity. Then we look at condition, funding, future need, operation and maintenance, public safety, resilience, and innovation. So we try to look at each one of these with those categories in mind, and then we use the traditional A to F grading system that folks are familiar with from school. And A is exceptional, fit for the future. The letter grade of B, which is really what we're shooting for in terms of our advocacy right now and the kind of numbers that we're suggesting should be invested in infrastructure to get us up to a state of good repair, or the grade of B. B is good or adequate for now. A grade of C represents mediocre and requires attention. A grade of D is poor and at risk. And F is failing, unfit for its purpose.
What's the time effort involved for your volunteers to put this together?
The year leading up to the release, so the past 12 months, pretty busy, numerous meetings and conference calls and media training. There's a fair amount that goes into pulling this together, and probably less so in the other 3 years leading up to the year in advance of the report card. So during those 3 years, it's mostly staff kind of keeping tabs on research that's continuing. I should say, when you know, we try to use the best publicly available information we can. For a number of the categories, the federal government has excellent information. In the category of roads, bridges, water, wastewater, airports, the inland waterway system, we're able to get a lot of good information from the government itself. There's also a number of trade associations and other organizations that track these issues, and we look at their information too.
You talked about some of the efforts at the state level. If your local organizations, which is all volunteers, if they want to do this, does your office provide support for them?
Yeah, we do. We have a couple of staff people in our Washington office. We have a small office on Capitol Hill, so people can easily get back and forth to Congress to get information. And it's often urgent when we get these requests. But we have two people dedicated to helping our states and local government relations activities. So when one of our states is interested in updating a report card they've done previously or doing a new one, they'll work closely with our staff to get a handle on sources of information, whether it's public or private sector, advice on timing, how to roll one of these things out, how to get good media coverage. I recall in Pennsylvania we did one a couple of years ago, and the report card was simultaneously released in four different cities across the state of Pennsylvania. So they were very good at maximizing the media coverage they could. So it's a very good partnership with the volunteers and staff.
Do you offer the state-level people a template for doing this job, for packaging this?
I don't think there's an exact template. People can see how we do this nationally. At the state level, the 16 categories that we address nationally may not play out perfectly at the state level. And there's variation in some states. It seems like transportation is an issue wherever you go, but in some states, dam safety might be more of an issue, or you know, rural water supply might be more of a concern. So there is some variation, and we do allow a little bit of variability there, since not every state is like the one next door. So there's not a precise template, but there are suggestions made. Usually all it takes is an initial discussion to get a sense from our volunteer leaders. It doesn't take much to actually sit down for about an hour with a group of our members to get a sense of, okay, what are the top categories in your state? Without even looking up something on Google right now, what do you guys think the grades are? If you were to give kind of a preliminary rough draft of a grade, and they're usually pretty good at being able to do that. And they can even come up with a one or two sentence soundbite that really justifies why they feel that way without doing a lot of research. Now, a lot of research will then happen after that, but it doesn't really take long to kind of get a pretty good initial assessment of what's going on in a given state. A lot of research will go to back that up, but I think that's how it really starts.
Do you ever get pushback? Does anybody at the state level or from a particular infrastructure sector say, oh, no, condition is really better, or even the condition is worse than you're saying?
You know, it's interesting. Over the years, there's been some apprehension about being so forward and candid about this issue. Certainly people are concerned. If you're a consulting engineer and one of the state agencies is one of your clients, and now you're part of ASC putting out a hard-hitting report card, there have been a couple of occasions where there has been some real apprehension that people felt. But over the years, the report card has become such a strong and authoritative vehicle for describing the issue. I think now we're at a point where agencies look forward to this coming out, and if they've got a good story that runs counter to what we're saying, it's an opportunity for them to say it. But what often happens is the agencies back up what we're saying and they say, this is important, ASC is a strong voice and a leader on this issue, and public leaders and the public at large need to pay attention. So the dynamic has shifted over the years, and I think people are more comfortable doing it.
Is it fair to say that funding is a primary obstacle to progress?
Funding, you know, we have three primary solutions or recommendations for moving forward. And we prefer to use the word investment because these are long-term investments that we make in infrastructure. Leadership is an important factor in terms of the solutions, and then planning and preparing for the future. And with that, we're referencing sustainability and resilience issues. If you're developing infrastructure, particularly in coastal environments now, and you know, you expect something to last 50, 75, or 100 years, you really do have to account for a more unpredictable environment and sea level rise issues than you did in the past. So, but coming back to funding, that is often the heavy lift on this, and I think it will be for the current Congress. But again, we have strong presidential leadership on this issue. And you have Democratic leaders in Congress that appear to want to dance with the president on this. So it's going to be interesting. It's one of the more promising times for this issue that I've seen in my 30-plus years in Washington.
In the past 4 years, ASC has published quite a bit of information describing the impacts of deteriorating and insufficient infrastructure, information on costs and consequences, impacts on the economy. This seems to me to be a new addition to a report that's got a nearly 20-year history. I assume that obviously that's intentional. Is that having an effect?
Yes, I think it has helped. You're referring to the failure to act economic studies that we commissioned. Yeah, I think we're getting inquiries from Congress. Okay, so we got these grades, and they're not good, but you know, what does that really mean? So the economic studies help us explain the fact that aging infrastructure is actually costing every American family $3,400 a year. That's $9 a day. That's just a drag on the economy. So this is, you're stuck in traffic, you have lost time. I mean, the average person loses the equivalent of a week's vacation being stuck in traffic in this country. And if you live in one of these parts of the country where there's really bad traffic, you might actually lose the equivalent of 2 weeks' time a year. But back to the money, the current situation, if we just maintain status quo and don't increase investments, we're continuing this $9 a day drag on every American family. And for an investment of a little over $3 a day, so you're looking at a benefit cost ratio of, you know, maybe 2.5 to 1, we could eliminate that drag. So it's already costing us. And if we make some smart investments, we can eliminate this drag, improve public safety, improve the economy, and the competitiveness of the United States. So I think these studies have helped. Certainly in certain business media outlets, there's been a lot of exposure on these studies. And there are a lot of other studies out there from other organizations that are consistent with this. You know, sometimes people will question ASCE, oh, you know, you're just trying to scare people to create a lot of work for engineers. And to that, I like to respond, if you had a serious medical issue, you'd probably see a doctor. Serious tax issue, you'd see a CPA. These infrastructure issues are serious, and we need to be talking to civil engineers, not just civil engineers, but civil engineers certainly need to be part of that debate. And people can just look around and judge for themselves what they think the condition, what the performance levels of their infrastructure is. And oftentimes people will say that what they experience is rather consistent with the grades that they see here. And I think the third point is, I don't think organizations like the Conference of Mayors, the National Governors Association, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Association of Manufacturers, and others would be spending so much time with ASC now if they didn't have faith in this information.
So it sounds like you're getting traction with this effort.
We are, but you know, whenever you deal with a trillion-dollar issue, it's going to take a little time. And let me just say also that $1 trillion, that number is the infrastructure gap we identified for all 16 categories on an annual basis is about $200 billion a year. Now, that's a big number, but on a U.S. GDP of roughly $19 trillion, and if you consider the importance or the framework or platform that infrastructure gives a society, $200 billion a year, and it's not just federal money, that's also state and local money, and then also the private sector. Between those various sources of funding and financing capability, we should be able to address this.
So I detect a tone of optimism in your voice.
Yes, although it's guarded optimism because we know how big this is. And Congress is doing a couple of other heavy lifts right now on health care, and they'll probably have to get onto tax reform soon. So if you will, this is another huge pillar for Congress to address. The first two issues I pointed out have more of a partisan angle to them, and the infrastructure issue is more of a unifying issue.
So maybe a more comfortable issue for people to talk about.
Yeah, even though talking about how to pay for this is never an easy conversation, we've seen so many red and blue states in the past few years approve bond initiatives on Election Day, gas tax increases, the reelect rate is very high for legislators. So I think members of Congress should kind of, you know, remember a lot of them came from state legislative bodies. Just because you come to Washington doesn't mean you lose your courage to cast the right vote.
Yes. Well, I appreciate your optimism. You sound more upbeat than you did the last time we spoke. And I will put it on my calendar to get back to you when the next report card comes out and hope for a better grade.
That's good. I look forward to that.
I'm glad we had a chance to talk to you today, Casey. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the time. Goodbye.